You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome in another edition of On the Tee with Anita Marks. Unfortunately, John Mascari and Christina Thompson could not be here as we tape this podcast today. So I'm rolling solo, but I have two very special guests who are going to be joining me. David Berman, who oversees our chalk site and Daily Wager and all our gambling content at ESPN, is going to be joining us in about 10 minutes. But more importantly, we have Julie Tyson, who's joining us, and this is the executive director of the Northern Trust. An exciting time right now because we've got the FedEx Cup taking place in the first leg, obviously, as at TPC in Boston, and that's the Northern Trust. So, Julie, thank you so much for joining us. Really do appreciate it. How you doing?
I'm great. This is like a little reunion every year we get to do this. I love it.
I love it too. I love it. And I so appreciate your time. So first and foremost, before we start diving into this tournament, you know, obviously a very unique and odd year for all of us. What has it been like overseeing being the director of a tournament and being so close to, you know, the PGA Tour and how things have been, you know, dealing with trying to get a tournament together during a pandemic, Julie?
Yeah, it's no easy feat. It's been sort of a surreal experience, and it's, you know, you're really leaning into relationships at the state level and the local level, and then through our tournament operations, trying to figure out what would a day in the life of every constituent that would come to the tournament be like, and how do we keep them safe? And so that's a level of detail that is mind-blowing, but one that has gotten us to this point, and we're just grateful we get to play.
I'm sure. So no fans. You know, and that's been, you know, that's been unfortunately the rule, the way that it's been since the tournament began. I know that as soon as I call it the pandemic pause. I know that the Memorial was hoping, they were eyeing that the Memorial, that, you know, the PGA Tour would be able to have some fans there, but, you know, obviously not the best. You know, how does that affect a tournament? I would imagine in regard to the loss of income and revenue that it generates.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, that's pretty substantial, but we kind of knew from early on, Massachusetts has taken a very conservative path. Our title sponsor never wanted any risks associated with the event and the ability to play it. So, you know, this still gives us the ability to normalize, you know, present something that fans really want to see. And there's not a lot of live content out there. So ratings have been up. We've really been seeing a lot more casual viewing. So that's been a really good thing for us. And, you know, I'm pleased that we've taken such a conservative path because it's allowed us from week to week to week to pass the mantle.
So let's talk about the three legs leading up, of course, to the Tour Championship and maybe some of the changes that have taken place. First and foremost, the Northern Trust, like I said, it's going to be held in TPC Boston. If I had a dollar for how many people have stopped me in the past 2 weeks, Julie, and said, why is it in New York? I said, well, we were blessed. We had it in New York the previous 2 years. Like, we have to share the wealth. So kind of explain, why TPC Boston?
Well, first, I hope that absence is making everyone's heart grow fonder. So we look forward to coming back next year. So hopefully they'll channel those energies into tickets for next year. So when we contracted the schedule after 2018 and went from four events in the playoffs to three, we had to make some hard decisions about where we would host the playoff events. New York and Boston both being iconic sports markets. We decided, wouldn't it be an interesting dynamic to have the event toggle back and forth and share the custody of this great event between the two markets? So, you know, we've got iconic Boston sports, we've got iconic New York sports, and that was really a lot of the decision making. And it's been really a good experience other than this, you know, sort of global pandemic thing we're dealing with.
So the Northern Trust, obviously the top 125 players based on the points that they've accumulated, again, a very odd season considering there was a 13-week hiatus and only one major that's been played, and of course that was out in San Francisco. What a beautiful event that was, and I'm a huge Morikawa fan, by the way. This young man is just so spectacular, and I think he's so great for the game. And then from there it goes to Chicago, to the Olympia Fields Country Club, and that will be 70 of the top 125, and then the Tour Championship, East Lake Atlanta, and that's the 30. But apparently, from what I'm reading, there's a change in regard to the points that is going to be accumulated by the winners because of the shortened season. Can you kind of elaborate on that?
Yeah, so you know, majors, you would typically play for more points in a major than you would a regular season event. And with the absence of some of those majors, and with the absence of a number of events that the players could compete for, we've shortened the number of points that a player will compete for in the Northern Trust. So usually it's 4x the number of points from a regular season event. Now we're going to 3x. So we've adjusted back a little bit of it just to make it a fairer playing field for everybody. However, there still is a pretty steep cut. So nearly half of the field will see the rest of their season end at the conclusion of Sunday's play. So it's a big deal. You know what else? We've got the first time we're going to have all 125 of the top 125. And so I think you know this, but there's no other exemptions. There's no way to get in. You just have to play your way in. And in prior years, if somebody's wife was pregnant or if they, you know, they opted out because they were injured, we would play with a field of 124. This year, we've had everyone commit.
Wow.
25 players commit.
How about Jim Herman last week winning the Wyndham chip? Get this, Julian. And again, I'm sure you know this. Coming into that tournament, he was ranked 318th in the world and 192 in regard to the FedEx Cup points. Unbelievable.
It's doing what it's supposed to, right? We want guys to clamor to get in. And Zach Johnson played his way in. He's another one. Shane Lowry played his way in. So, you know, you start to look at these guys and it's doing what it's supposed to. It's competitive and people want to play and then they want to keep playing.
One guy, obviously, we talk about each and every year you're on the show with us, and that's Tiger Woods.
I thought you were going to say Ricky Fowler.
Well, yeah. What is going on with him this year, Julie? Like, it's like each and every year I'm just like, oh, this is going to be the year he wins his first major. And then it just doesn't happen. Now, you know, he's been very successful at TPC here in Boston. We'll see what happens. My money is not on him. Again, David Berman's going to be joining us a little bit later on in the podcast, and we're going to talk about who we like heading into Thursday. But in regard to Tiger, which, by the way, really quick, did you see what his 11-year-old son, Charlie Woods, was able to do?
He played in the field. Yeah.
Oh, my God. He played in a U.S. kids golf tournament at 11 years old. He was 3-under-33 in the first nine, in the nine holes. That was the tournament. He won by 5 shots. So, I mean, you know, if Tiger can come into this and, like, channel a little bit of his young son, Charlie, that would be great. But, you know, Tiger, I think this is a different situation for him because he has not had a great season so far. And him coming in, I mean, he's really going to have to make some noise at the Northern Trust to advance.
Well, you know, he's won here before and he was the host of this tournament for many years. So he's very familiar with the golf course. And so, you know, I'm not going to handicap who's going to do well or not, but I would never count that guy out ever.
You know, in looking at some of the metrics here that guys need to do well at TPC Boston, Julie, is they need to be really long off the tee. And I feel like this has been the season for that, right? And let's give credit where credit's due. DeChambeau, he made the most of his pandemic opportunity. And anyone who listens to me on my radio show, I try to look for the silver lining. Like, I think this pandemic, as horrible as it is, I think each and every one of us can take some positives out of it. And DeChambeau definitely has done that. And he's come out and he's just been unbelievable. The weight that he's gained, the muscle that he's gained, the way that he's driving the ball. I think people underestimate his putting. This is the guy that I like coming into this tournament. And really, I think he's been the face and the story of this season. Don't you?
Well, he's been one of them for sure. And, you know, I think that his road to this, you know, new Bryson, fit Bryson has been coming on for a couple of years. And then he just used this year to really amp it up quite a bit. I think it's hard to ignore the distances he's getting off the tee and then the advantages that gives him when he's coming into a green. He's a technically skilled player and he, you know, he looks at the game in that way. So he's been one of the good storylines. You know, Morikawa and the young guys are really fun to watch. There's a lot of them. Justin Thomas continues to play well and compete. Patrick Reed, who is a defending champ from last year, he plays well. So I think there's a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. So, you know, the weather is supposed to be great from what I understand, which is always awesome. What else can you tell us in what to expect starting Thursday at TPC Boston that you think some of our listeners would be interested in knowing?
Well, you know, we've tried to do as much as we can with the viewing opportunities. So PGA Tour Live is going to carry a lot. Golf Channel will carry a lot. And then, you know, we'll move from Golf Channel to CBS over the weekend because we want fans to still be able to experience every shot and all the experience of the golf course. This is the tale of two nines. So also I would say that this is an interesting golf course designed by Arnold Palmer and then moved on. And Gil Hans has taken over from there. So he's tweaked pretty much every aspect of the golf course. So it should be interesting to watch.
Are you going to be out there, Julie?
Yeah, I will.
You are? Okay.
So you that gets to be on campus. I had to be tested to be inside the bubble, as they say.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I'll be looking for you. Always a pleasure having you on. And I'm really, really excited, not just for the Northern Trust, but the next few weeks. This is going to be a lot of fun, a lot of competition. So again, appreciate your time, Julie. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Have a great one.
You got it. Julie Tyson, again, Executive Director of the Northern Trust, who does a phenomenal job each and every year. Without further ado, let's bring in David Berman, who's joining us now. Of course, he oversees everything chalk, daily wager with ESPN. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you, Anita?
I'm doing all right. Pretty cool talking to Julie about you know what to expect come Thursday. This is an exciting time, you know. But also let's talk about this
NHL playoffs.
But a different time, right? Because yeah. Usually we've had majors more than just one happen before. This is supposed to be the period of time where it's we're getting towards the end of the season and we're about to crown a champion when really we've only had one major. And then once this is over, once the tour championship happens, David, as we know, 2 weeks later, it's the U.S. Open at Wingfoot. So just a very, very different schedule to digest.
Yeah, this is one year that will go down in history as something no one's ever seen before. Hopefully it won't be something we have to repeat. And it is funny that you had mentioned that the U.S. Open is 2 weeks after the tour championship. And I think I mentioned this on your show last week. People don't even realize that the U.S. Open and the Masters are technically the 2021 season because it's at once the tour championship ends, you crown a champion, you wrap up 2020 for what it was, and then you move on. So if you win the whatever points you get at the U.S. Open and the Masters is counting towards the 2021 FedEx Cup season and the following Ryder Cup and President's Cup season, it's going to go down in our minds as the 2020 U.S. Open because it's played in 2020 and the 2020 Masters played in November instead of April, which just sounds weird. But technically speaking, it is part of the 2021 season. So you're going to have six majors next year on the calendar that'll count towards FedEx Cup. And it's I actually, taking the reasons aside, I actually like the condensed. You have a major, 2 weeks later you have a FedEx Cup event. Just before the major you had a WGC, and then you have another World Golf, you'll have another FedEx Cup event, and then you'll have the U.S. Open. I like it being condensed. Unfortunately, it's for the wrong reasons, but I wouldn't mind taking a June or July down the line and having multiple majors and multiple, you know, FedEx Cup and WGC events all at one time. But you get look at the fields we have had the last couple of weeks, and take out one or two events that had weaker fields. You've had the best of the game, the best players playing these events, and the golf has shown. You've seen some really good golf out there, and you can't go any further than what Colin Morikawa did 2 weeks ago at the PGA Championship.
Yeah, really, really unbelievable. All right, before we start looking forward to the Northern Trust, let's just take a step back and admire what Jim Herman was able to do, winning the Wyndham Championship. Again, I mentioned this with Julie just a second ago, ranked 318th in the world coming in, 192nd in the FedEx Cup points. And I read this stat, 444 feet of putts that he made to win last week, going in 600-1. I played golf yesterday with a friend of mine whose boyfriend on Sunday put money down. Apparently he went to Jim's Twitter. He went to Jim's social media, his Twitter page, and Jim had posted that the president had reached out to him and said, listen, I believe in you. You've got this. President Trump, I guess, gave him like his stamp of approval and his seal, you know, that he was going to win. And her boyfriend was like, you know what, I'm going to drop some money on Jim Herman. Why not? and I think walked away with like $800. Hey. But really, really unbelievable.
You got to tip your cap. Here's a guy who barely made the cut. You said he was 300-400 in the world. He wasn't anywhere near making the FedEx Cup 125. It wasn't going to happen. And then you talk about a hell of a weekend, 61-63. You can't really script that any better for him to not only win the event, get some exemptions, get into the FedEx Cup. But, I mean, tip your cap to him. He putted out of his mind. He wasn't on anybody's radar. We always joke on these shows when we're handicapping golf that, you know, we're going to take the Bryson DeChambeaus, we're going to take the Webb Simpsons and Dustin Johnsons, and then we're always going to, especially in the column that we're writing, we're going to throw one against the wall and hope it sticks. And, you know, not many of us can admit that we've won one of these, but hat off to your friend's boyfriend who got 600-1 payoff. I mean, that's the stuff that you dream of doing, but you're probably not going to have many people on your podcast or your shows who say, hey, Anita, Jim Herman's the guy who's going to win this week.
Right. All right. So let's really break down the FedEx Cup. And again, the first stop is Boston, the TPC in Boston. The metrics, again, we've got an article that's going to be posting tomorrow on our Chalk site. And so all of us, you, me, Doug, the Bear, we do our homework. The metrics here, grip it and rip it, baby. You know, those are the guys that you want to keep an eye on, guys that are just driving, are leading top of the board in regard to driving distance. And right now it's DeChambeau at 1, Cameron Champ at 2, Rory at 5. I love Matthew Wolff tied for 8. Adam Scott tied for 16th. Tony Finau, 18. Shoffley, 31. Rahm, 34. Justin Thomas, though, very interesting here, David, tied for 60th. Now, these are stats driving distance on this season alone, just FYI. Let's kick it off with the winners. I like DeChambeau, 11-1. I also like Justin Thomas, 13-1. These are the two guys that I'm going to be eyeing to win it this coming week.
It's hard not to like Bryson. You mentioned it right off the top there, grip it and rip it. You know, here's a guy who is not gripping it or ripping it. You know, he's gripping or ripping it better than every single person on tour. So if he has control of his short game this week and can, you know, get those wedges into the green, then he's a guy that you have to think at 11-1 is a good price to win it. It's not someone I'm taking in the column because to me it's too obvious. You know, we can all take Bryson. We're not really giving good information out there. You had mentioned Adam Scott a few minutes ago. He is somebody that's sitting at 38-1 that I'm going to throw in the column. As he's a guy that, you know, he's a 25-time winner on the PGA and European Tour. He won the 2013 Masters, and you haven't seen much from him. So his odds are long because he's only played one event post-COVID. He took an extended break, didn't come back until the PGA Tour Championship 2 weeks ago, and we got a T22 in his first event back. He may not be someone who goes out there and wins it at 38-39-1 because he only has 4 rounds under his belt. But he's someone that I can definitely think will be in the top 10 and top 20. You can get 2.5-1 and 4.5-1, as you'll see in the column tomorrow. You mentioned he was 16th in driving distance. He is someone that I think can be in contention, even though he's only played once post-COVID. You can't go very far without mentioning whether he's a grip-it-rip-it guy or not. Morikawa, here's a guy who just won the PGA Championship, playing as good as anybody on tour. His metrics are off the charts when it comes to shots gained on approach, shots gained to the green, shots gained off the tee, shots gained totaled. He hits a lot of greens in regulation, and you can still get him at 25-1. The guy is number 2 in the FedEx Cup rankings, and he's 7th shortest odds of anybody in this event. So you're getting value there to begin with. One of them I wanted to throw out there, and I know we have a lot longer to talk, but I might as well just throw this out there. Justin Rose, that's a guy who can grip it and rip it. It's a guy who was in contention at the PGA Championship, and he was somebody who I was like, oh, man, I had him. I thought about taking him, and I saw him in contention on Saturday. I'm like, this guy can get this stuff done. Sure, he missed 3 consecutive cuts leading into the PGA Championship, but he was 60-1 going into that event, and he was near the top of the leaderboard at T2 at one point. You can get him anywhere from 55-70-1 this week. You're talking about a guy who knows how to win, who knows how to grip it and rip it, who has played well at this course before, and you can get him at 55-70 range. And I'm going to be playing some on Justin Rose this week.
Interesting. I want to go back to Morikawa for a second because, you know, Morikawa is the guy that, like you said, not necessarily long off the tee, and really struggles with his putter and has struggled with his putter. Those are two metrics that you need. So one of the best matchups I love is Jason Day finishing better than Morikawa at minus 106? Maybe we have a little personal wager. We put on the podcast. I take Day. You take Morikawa to see who finishes higher on the leaderboard. I love Jason Day. Listen, this dude is back. His last four starts, he's finished in the top seven, if not better. Another guy that I like. So I'm going to throw out some guys that I like to finish in the top five. Patrick Reed loves, his game is in great form, and he loves these big events, and he's great on bent grass. That's what they'll be putting on. And apparently, from what I understand, these are going to be firm and fast. Weather's supposed to be nice. They're going to be rolling at like 12.5, maybe 13s. So Patrick Reed, Jason Day, Schauffele, Berger, Finau, Cantlay, love all these guys to finish in the top five, David, and you could get them on DraftKings anywhere between plus 600 to plus 450.
Going back to the bet for a second, I was all set to get that nice bottle of wine from you for the XFL bet that we made on your pod, and then you had this COVID thing strike, so you didn't have to pay the bottle, but you could double it up. And I'm fine with taking Morikawa in that one. And Jason Day does fit the metrics for this. He is playing well, but I think that's a fair bet. I do know that he doesn't hit it as far as the other guys, so he'll be at a little bit of a disadvantage. But from what I saw from his play last week, he's a guy that I just enjoy playing. I had him a lot earlier this year when he didn't win. Some of the guys you mentioned, Patrick Reed, who won this event in New York last year, can obviously play on the bent greens. I would look out for Billy Horschel as well. I know that's a day late and a dollar short as he finished T2 last week and almost got it done. But if you remember a couple of years ago, Horschel came out of nowhere, finished T2 at this event in Boston, then won the PMW and the Tour Championship to take down the FedEx Cup. He played well last week, and you can get him 55-1 to finish in the top 20. 55-1 to win overall, and you can get him at towards 11-1 to finish in the top five and top tens. So I think he's a guy that I might play with this week. And I had mentioned earlier taking Justin Rose at 55-1 or getting him as a top 20 at 3-1 on DraftKings. One name neither one of us have mentioned, and maybe it's because he's not a grip it and rip it guy, but he is among the best at hitting greens. Neither one of us have mentioned my boy Webb. What do you think about Webb Simpson this week?
I do. You're absolutely right. Really, you know, not too long off the tee, but, you know, definitely up there in all the other metrics. Strokes gained on approach, greens in regulation from 150 to 175. That's an important metric coming in. I do like Webb. I don't expect him to. Here's the thing, you know, issues with his caddy, not issues, but doesn't have his normal caddy. There was some talk and speculation, David, did you hear, where he was dealing with a rib injury? And again, not that it's affected him where he's not making a cut. I'm not putting money on Webb to win it, but I will throw some money on him to finish maybe in the top five, top 10. Here's a guy that I don't feel is really getting enough love, and I think he's flying low on the radar, and this is a guy that I really love to finish in the top five, and that's Schauffele at plus 450. And look at the metrics here. Driving distance, 30, and this is from this season. Driving distance, 31. Strokes gained on approach, ranked 37. Greens in regulation from 150, 175, ranked 45. And scrambling, that's another thing at this tournament, scrambling. He's ranked 6 and also putts very well on bent grass. So, you know, Schauffele is a guy that could win this, but man, to get him to finish in the top five with all those metrics and this course fitting his game like that, I love it at plus 450.
Xander's a guy that you and I talk about almost every single week. That mm-hmm. He's as talented as anybody on tour, and it's surprising that he hasn't won more often than he has. But he is in contention in almost every major. He's in contention almost every WGC event. So I expect him to be in contention. You mentioned the driving distance, greens and regulation, scrambling. He fits the mold for this course. But for some reason, he's just not a guy who's finishing the deal on Sundays. And, you know, I put guys like Xander Schauffele and Ricky Fowler in the same category. Guys that you would expect to have two or three major wins, a couple of FedEx Cup championships, maybe a WGC here and there. And they haven't gotten that done yet. Although, when you close your eyes and think about their playing and you go back and look at the metrics, like they're just as good as anybody on tour. They're just not finishing the deal and winning these big events. I would not be surprised on Sunday to find Xander Schauffele winning, but he also needs to prove that he can actually win on Sunday before I do pick him.
All right. What about top 10? Some guys that I have listed that I'm going to put money down in the top 10. You mentioned Adam Scott, definitely going to be on that. Hovland and Hatton as well. Hatton, you can get at plus 500. Hovland, plus 500. Adam Scott at plus 450. Who are some of the guys that you're looking at to finish in the top 10, David?
Sure. I think Patrick Cantlay can finish up there. He's 335 to finish in the top 10. Obviously, I think you had mentioned Hideki Matsuyama earlier at 4.5 to 1 to finish up there. I'll throw a name out there that he's done well this year, but he isn't on anybody's radar, is Abraham Ancer. I think he can do well and finish up there, and you get 5 to 1 on him to finish in the top 10. I had mentioned Adam Scott is 4.5 to 1. Justin Rose, 6.5 to 1. And I wouldn't be surprised to find somebody like Alexander Noren to sneak in the back door and have a good Sunday and finish 8 to 1. So there's somebody I might sprinkle some of the stuff on. And Siwoo Kim showed last week that, you know, he's, hello, look at me. I had the lead after a couple of rounds. I would be surprised if he goes out there. He's 90 to 1 to win, but you could play him at 8 to 1 to finish in the top 10.
Some top 20s for you. And these guys really scream out to me just because, again, I'm really we've touched on a lot of metrics, but probably the most important one is driving distance. And that's Matthew Wolf. He's tied for 8th. And Cameron Champ, he's 2nd on tour for driving distance this season. So both of them you can get in the top 20. So Wolf is at plus 300. Champ is at plus 400 as well. So those are two guys I see finishing the top 20 just on the fact that they could just, again, grip it and rip it alone.
And there are three guys that we have yet to mention at all during this entire 20-minute interview, and we haven't mentioned the likes of Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, or Tiger Woods, three former number one players who have combined for a zillion and a half majors more than we have. I would throw out there that I think this is a course that Dustin can grip it or rip it. It wouldn't be stunned to see him contend on Saturday and Sunday on the weekend. And this is a course that Rory McIlroy has played well, has won at multiple times, and he's 5th on tour in driving distance. And he's played, you know, he's had some struggles since we've come back from the pandemic. But, you know, at some point, Rory's going to break through. So is it this week? Is it next week? Maybe if he makes the tour championship, it's the week after. And then there's that guy named Eldrick Tiger Woods. What do you think he's going to do this week?
Here's the thing. His putting is just so god-awful right now. And not that that's the most important metric in winning this week, this coming week, but it's one of the top 4. So, you know, and he's not the longest off the tee. So, nope. You know, he could poke it, that's for sure. But is he out there in regard to metrics of one of the longest off the tee? No. And is he struggling with his putter? Yes. I'm done predicting missed cuts. Obviously, and you and I joke. I feel like I'll predict a player will miss the cut and he'll either win the tournament or he'll finish in the top 5. So I'm done doing that. But let's get into some matchups really
sure.
quick. Okay. So for example, like here's one of my favorite matchups. You talk about Adam Scott. You love Adam Scott. I love him too in this matchup to finish better than Tiger in the tournament at minus 106. Are you kidding me? I love that. I already talked about Jason Day over Morikawa at minus 106 as well. Some other ones that I like, Hatton over Varner at minus 132. I love Brendan Todd over Louis O for minus 112. Louis O has just not looked good as of late. I'll take Justin Thomas over Rahm at minus 137. I'll take DeChambeau over Rory at 137. And I'll take Finau over DJ at 106. But my two favorites, like I said, are Adam Scott over Tiger and Jason Day over Morikawa. Those are my two favorite matchups heading into this week.
I would definitely play, as we talked earlier, Adam Scott. You're not getting plus money, but he's the underdog to Tiger, and I think that's good value there. I would take Dustin Johnson over Finau just because I've been fading Finau left and right. Pay the price on Thursday and Friday, and you get it back on Saturday and Sunday. I would also probably I'm looking down the list right now as we speak. I do like your Brendan Todd, but I would also take Alexander Noren versus Phil Mickelson. It's a slight favorite. It's not one that you're laying a lot of money, so I would take that one. And then looking at the other matchups, I would probably take Mr. Harrison English over Ricky Fowler just because Ricky hasn't played very well other than one or two rounds, and English is just a top 20 machine left and right.
Yeah, he disappointed me this week in DFS, I have to say.
He had one bad week.
I know, but like I was
top,
like
the guy's been a top 20 machine all year long.
I know, but like I was in contention to win like a lot of money on DFS, and all I needed for him to do was just like birdie a few holes, and he kept on bogeying them, and I was like live on radio, David. I was like I was pulling my hair out while I was trying to host Sports Talk Radio. Here's some fun ones for you as well. Will there be an albatross? Yes, at 16-1. Why? There's a few reachable par fives. So why not think a dude can get an albatross with like a five, like a 7-iron or a 5-7 wood or a 5 wood from the fairway? So
do you call it an albatross or do you call it a double eagle?
Oh, I call it an albatross.
So do I. I was watching an old version of Jeopardy the other night, since there's an old version.
And
it had to do with birds, and the category had to do with birds, and it said this term is 3 under par. I yelled out albatross, and my kids and my wife were all like, oh, wow, that was fast. Obviously, I knew the answer. And the answer was, what is double eagle? And everyone's like, oh, he didn't know. Boo. And I'm like, no. First of all, this is an episode from like 1989. I got booed out of my own house. Like, no one calls it a double eagle, but
That's so funny. Like, oh, your family heckling you.
They heckled me because I yelled albatross within a half a second, and the answer was, what is double eagle? Great.
Here's some fun ones for you. And these, again, you can find on DraftKings. The best Arizona State player to finish, Rahm at +125. The best Georgia player to finish, Patrick Reed at +250. David, +250. The best Oklahoma State player. And I know we talked about Ricky, and you know that I have a very special orange piece of my heart for Ricky, but Hovland at +250. Those are fun. Come on, those are fun. Those are great odds.
I might either have to drive to Jersey or send you some PayPal for that Patrick Reed +251. I like that one. I obviously up in Connecticut we can't partake, but maybe I'll drive down to Jersey and throw some point on that.
You should. We're due to tee it up again.
We are. Only if you wear your Ricky Fowler orange though.
Well, I actually so this year I'm using the Callaway matte balls, the color balls, and I'm using the orange ones, and that's yeah. I'm addicted to these matte balls now. I love the way that they feel. I love the way that they come off the club. I love the way that they putt. I'm in love with them. Not to mention, I could get them in orange.
I mean, you gotta play with what you like. And I would tell you that I worked the British Open way back when, and met Paula Creamer at a bar later that night, and she was handing out pink balls, like that's her thing, Paula Creamer. And so I went ahead and said, all right, well, I'm going to play with this. And of course I was, you know, why is he playing with a pink ball? I'm like, well, Paula Creamer gave it to me. And I went ahead and shot like an 87 that week. So I played with the pink ball until I lost it somewhere in the woods. But hey, you got to go with what you got to go with. You go with your orange ball, it works. I have a friend I play with who plays yellow balls all day, and it hurts your eyes to watch it.
Yeah, but they're easy to find. So, hey, before let's end on this, because you know that September 7th, the tour champion will be crowned, and by the way, that's around Labor Day. So, you know, based on where everybody stands right now with their points total, we know JT's coming into this with the most points. Who do you think at the end of the day is going to win the tour championship, David?
I think at the end of the day, it's going to be JT. He has the advantage going in, and I think he'll hold on to it. But, you know, can a Webb Simpson or a John Rahm go ahead and take that title with some good showings over the last three events? I think they can. I would look towards guys who have played consistent all year, and that's not Rory and that's not Tiger. Bryson can get it done, but Bryson has to fit the course, and I'm not sure the one in Atlanta is for him. So I would look at Simpson, Rahm, and maybe Xander to be guys that if they can win could potentially catch Justin Thomas and Colin Miller-Carlisle. Let's call it what it is. Morikawa just needs another win and he's in first place. But if I had to put money on it, I would count on JT doing well the last 3 weeks and holding on.
Fantastic.
It might be Billy Horschel for all we know.
Any Gator. Any final thoughts before we sign off, David?
I would say enjoy the playoff. It's a good full sprint to the finish. Stay safe, and I look forward to catching two bottles of wine from you when we meet next.
We'll see. We'll see. Keep your eye on Jason Day. I appreciate you filling in for both John Mascari and Christina Thompson, who couldn't make this podcast, unfortunately, due to work. So really do appreciate you, David. Thank you so much. Enjoy the tournament.
Thank you. You too.